meeting come to order. It's the Hess Committee meeting for February, what was the date? February 12th. Members present are co-chair Georgiana Lincoln, Mr. Gonzalez, Representative Gonzalez, Representative Betty Davis, Representative Mark Handley, Representative Mary Miller, and Representative Sherry Davis. The bill, the first bill on our committee schedule this morning is House Bill 53. The sponsor is here, Representative Mackey. Would you take the chair and make your presentation, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Co-Chairman. I appreciate the willingness on the part of the chair to schedule this bill first today and allow me to speak first. This is a very busy week for me. I have about 30 school board members in town and municipal officials and administrators. And I'm also chairing two committees, and three of my bills are being heard this week. So I appreciate you accommodating my schedule, as I do need to leave in about 15 minutes. But what I'd like to do is to make a brief opening statement as to why I sponsored the bill. And then, with your indulgence, I would like to ask Mr. Steve McFeeters to take my seat and answer questions and to make a presentation in regards to the mechanics of the bill and the numbers and things, as he, along with other members of the education community, were the architects of this bill. So if that's all right with you, then I'll proceed. I submitted a brief statement on House Bill 53, a sponsor statement, and I'd just like to read that for the record. I introduced House Bill 53 as a comprehensive approach to education formula funding adjustments needed to bring the state system into proper balance. It is a result of the collective efforts and opinions of school boards and administrators throughout the state. In my own district, the single and dual site problem is the most pressing. The issue has been before the legislature for several years with general acknowledgement of the inequity, yet remaining unresolved. I know the present situation has seriously reduced the educational opportunities of the major portion of the kids in my district. If not corrected, I fear the results will be a second-class education system, and the damage from that cannot be undone nor excused. Many school districts across the state are similarly threatened by other deficiencies in the formula. This concerns me also. It is my hope that by addressing all schools' funding situations that we may achieve success. I guess that's part of the reason I'm sponsoring the bill. The other part of the reason is this is my 7-year-old son who is a first grader, and I honestly believe that he, along with other children in the state, deserve to have a quality education. I know that every effort is being made on behalf of the education community and the legislature to provide the best education that we can, but the fact of the matter is that we haven't had any increases in education for the last 5 years. We've had increasing enrollment, increasing school costs, increasing salaries, which happens with people being there for a while, and you know, we've kind of surpassed the ability to be able to provide a quality education and continue to offer programs and so forth. I commend the education community for doing what they can with what they have to work with, and you know, their efforts are admirable. But my effort as a legislator, along with my colleagues here, is to try to change some of those inequities. Co-sponsoring on the bill, along with myself, is Representative Larson, Representative Grusendorf, Representative Carney, Representative Barnes, Representative McLean, Representative Gail Phillips, and Representative Richard Foster. A lot of them will probably be testifying or offering some form of written testimony in the future. What brought me into being interested in this particular bill was the fact that I represent a district, District 2, which has many single dual site districts that were affected by the inequities in the funding foundation formula. As many of you know, the single dual site issue has been addressed for the last several years, but hasn't been resolved. And that was a goal of mine, was to try to continue that, as I have 9 of those districts residing in my district itself. So it's a big issue to me. It's a big issue to my district. But a single dual site isn't the only problem that we have with the funding foundation formula. It was pretty obvious to me that if I was to take on the single dual site issue alone, perhaps my chances of getting that resolved by the legislature may not be that good, because we're looking at it realistically, because there are other funding inequities that exist throughout the state in regards to the foundation formula. And I felt that the concept of looking at all of the inequities and making all of the changes that were necessary in one piece of legislation was the best way to go and look at the other regions of the state. And I've been more than willing to do that. The bill itself was a result of the Alaska School Administrators Association, along with input from the Alaska school boards and virtually every corner of education in the state, coming together, everybody bringing all of their problems, quote unquote, with the formula to the table and sitting down and trying to work them out and compromise where compromises were needed, and to come up with a bill that would address all of the funding and equity needs in the state. This bill, I believe, is a result of that effort by those people. I personally had very little to do with the actual preparation of the bill, the formulas, and so forth, but I'm extremely honored to have the opportunity to be a co-sponsor of the measure on their behalf. Education is my number one priority. I'm not an educator, I'm not a teacher or a school board member, nor do I have a lot of experience in the field of education, unlike some of the people sitting at this table who have spent a great deal of their life working for education. However, as I said before, I have a 7-year-old son who's in first grade, and I share the same concern that other parents and educators throughout the state share about providing a quality education for the children of Alaska. And that is my purpose and my intent. I wish I could get into the formula a little bit more. I'm under some time constraints, but I'm sure that we have the resources available here to be able to provide insight, not only from the perspective of the bill and the formula and everything, which Steve McPeters will get into, but a lot of my constituents and a lot of constituents from around the state who are here for the school board convention who deal with these problems on a personal basis every day as school board members and administrators would be able to shed a human light on the whole issue. So with that, I'll stop and answer any questions that the committee may have or entertain any comments that you might have at this time.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative Mackey, I applaud your introduction of this bill. I, too, am very interested in education. And in my district in particular, we're especially concerned about the services in the classroom. And I'm wondering if you would be amenable to an amendment that would, since we are addressing aid for education, addressing a multitude of problems with funding for education, would you be amenable to an amendment that would address the percent of funding that would be allowed for administration, therefore guaranteeing a certain percent, hopefully a higher percentage, which would go directly into services? That's a great concern of my constituency. And since this is, I picked up on your concern that we address a multitude of issues, put it all in one piece of legislation, and I'm wondering if you would think about this, and I'd like to recommend that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
And Representative Miller, thank you for your concern. At this point in time, I would have to say that I'd be happy to consider the amendment that you may propose. I would like to see the amendment and see how it affects, and I would also like to consult with the people that are pushing hard for the bill and that put the work into this particular bill to see how it affects the overall picture. As a short answer to your question, I'd be happy to look at that, and we would do that in a timely manner for you. But I would like to just make another statement in regards to amendments or changes or whatever. There are four major sections of this bill, and I'm sure most of you had an opportunity to look through them. There was a lot of work that went into getting everybody to agree, and I think that you'll see in your packets, and you're probably getting it in the mail, and you're certainly going to hear a lot of testimony, and you're going to get strong-armed, if you will, a lot by just about every faction of the education community in the state, which includes the teachers' unions and the school boards and the administrators and everybody, because this was a very strong effort to unify the education community in Alaska on one piece of legislation, and that's never been done before, to my knowledge. So I guess I'm going to be a little bit cautious as to how much I'm going to be willing to deviate from this package here, because it was an effort where compromises had to be made, and not everybody is happy, nor will everybody be able to be happy on a bill of this nature. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of talk about hold harmless, there's going to be a lot of talk about single dual site, there's going to be a lot of talk about a lot of things, but please bear in the back of your mind that, you know, a very big effort went into trying to compromise and putting things in where everybody basically can be taken care of. The Maxu problem was taken care of, single dual site, the Anchorage is happy. I mean, there's a lot of different factions of this bill that if you take one out, everybody bails out, or this group bails out, or whatever. And the intent was to not have dissension amongst the education community, to come together and agree as much as we can on the whole picture, and then, you know, try to push it through. So I guess that's just a general statement, but I would be happy to look at any individual amendments and discuss them with my colleagues.
Second feature question, Representative Lincoln.
Thank you. Representative Mackey, I was just wondering if you could just again highlight for in House Bill 53, how does this act positively affect the rural school districts?
I
don't feel real comfortable because I don't want to give you the wrong information. I think I have a pretty good idea, but I'm still learning a lot myself. So, sure, if you'd have
Representative Davis. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative Mackey. The couple of things that this bill does, and I'll just highlight the main ones. That first of all, it increases the instructional unit. That in itself helps the rural districts. And it also helps a number of the rural districts which are single dual sites and have been under some pressure over the past few years to, because the formula has been inequitable. It was determined at the time it was put together to be inequitable to single dual sites, and that's been, we've been attempting to get a change there for many, many years. So the smaller rural districts have been hurting the worst of anybody over the past few years, and that this bill does address their concerns that have been there for a long time. So in answer to your question, it helps all the rural districts in one way, and it helps the smaller ones a double dose.
Thank you. And if I might ask the flip side of that then, and if I could just continue then, Representative Mackey, is there any part of the bill that would be detrimental to the rural villages?
Can't imagine, no, Mr. Chairman.
I have to place a certain amount of faith in the single dual site consortium, if you will, which was a group of all of the single dual site districts around the state that formed a consortium of approximately 27 school districts. That number never was really quite too firm, but to address the problems of single dual site. And they tell me that they are completely satisfied with this bill, that everybody made some compromises, and that the rural school districts are taken care of under this bill. And I have to feel comfortable with that, because I've not received any negative feedback from any rural school district in the state, and I've gotten a heck of a lot of positive support for it. So,
thank you.
Reviewing the bill, and it is, and I can truly appreciate the fact that it is a complicated formula, and that's why I'm asking the questions. They probably are very simple answers to these questions, but it is a very complicated bill, and I can appreciate all the work that has gone into it. But when we talk about the single dual sites that with the 49 villages that are within my district, I have actually very few that fall under that category. And so in responding to the concerns of the educational community within my district, then what you're saying is then it's more geared then toward the instructional units that would have a positive impact.
Can I make, Mr. Chairman, I do need to be excused, and again, I would really thank you for this opportunity to hear the bill while our constituency are in town. And Steve McFeeters would be able to actually expand a little bit on Representative Lincoln's concerns without a doubt, and I would call on him to do that. I would ask you to please consider, as a final comment, the fact that in 1986, the average amount of money that was spent per student in Alaska was higher than it is today. And so we haven't, you know, although the money for education has increased, we haven't kept up with the enrollment, we haven't kept up with the rising costs and inflation and a lot of other things. And, you know, to me that's really a tragedy, because education is the number one thing that we should be interested in providing to our children of Alaska, from all regions of the state, rural, urban, because as we know, in a lot of rural areas, there's not a lot of employment opportunities. And if we provide our children with an education, the chances for them to be successful in life are going to be greater. And I'm 100% committed to the effort that went into this bill and to, you know, to sponsoring this bill. And I'd be happy to come back at any time and work some more with the committee. So with that, I'd like to ask Mr. McFeeters to...
Well, thank you, Jerry. First, I'd like to offer an opportunity for Representative Larson, who's a co-sponsor, to say a few words if you'd like.
Thank you.
Let the record show that Representative Larson and Representative Ivan have joined us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Representative Mackey gave a kind of a good introduction. What I'd like to do, because I see many members of the committee are new to this issue this year, is to take a brief history. Over the past, three, 4 years, we became concerned about school funding in the state of Alaska, and we heard much about the single dual site. One of the problems that presented to the legislature is that it was just directing, in my opinion, attention on just part of the total problem. That there were problems with the single dual sites. There were also problems with the large school districts and also in some of the school districts that were in between, especially those districts that had, like yours and mine, Representative Carney, on some fairly large schools, but yet very small rural schools. So what I see here is an attempt to at least address the concern, not totally of any one group, but at least addressing the major concerns of all of the groups, whether they be the small single dual sites or the very large. So I would, of course, encourage the committee to take a real serious look at this, a positive approach, I think, to answer some of the major problems that we have facing education. I'd also like to mention, too, I think Representative Miller asked about a certain percentage rule for administration. At one time, we did have one. It was called the 55% rule, that 55% of the money must be spent directly in education. My only comment on that was, I think it was a good rule, but it was a rule that everyone came and asked for an exemption from, and it was never enforced, and therefore it went away. Maybe it's time to rethink that again. Also, if we're looking at education funding, I want to bring to the committee's attention not only the formula itself, but we also have to look at the area cost differential. In other words, that education, in my opinion, should be funded on the cost of education within an area, not necessarily the cost of living within that area. And you do have a bill to look at there, and maybe we should look at that as kind of companions as we move along major reforms in education. So with that, I would be happy to try to answer any questions that anyone may have and encourage you to put some good hard work in this bill, because it's badly needed.
Representative Sherry Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Larson, you've spent years on the Finance Committee in dealing with educational issues, so I consider you to be an expert, and that's why I'm asking you this as, instead of somebody from DOE or whatever. I have a question about the fiscal note on this bill, and my question is, I always assumed, maybe wrongly, and you can correct me, that a fiscal note was, if you had a law and you would have, that produced a formula, and the formula was X, and if you fully funded the formula, this would be the amount of money that that formula would produce. And then if you did a if you did an additional bill that was going to raise that, the fiscal note would reflect the difference between actual law and the proposed. I'm looking at this, and this is obviously showing what the legislature funded, not what the law would provide, and the difference between that and what this bill would do if it was fully funded. I'm asking you, is that a correct way to do a fiscal note? Is that kind of creative financing? What's the deal?
Sure. Fiscal note, as you all know, that accompanied many bills are fiscal notes showing what it will cost. Fiscal notes are handled during the times of the conference committee. And the conference committee may recommend the full fiscal note or may recommend a zero fiscal note. So if this bill was to pass with a fiscal note that's different than what is in the budget for the formula funding, which could have precedence. It would be my opinion the law would have precedence unless the conference committee accepts the full fiscal note and recommends that then to both bodies for their consideration.
Further questions or any questions? Tim Hammond.
Hi, did you hear Representative Miller's comments on getting the money? You did, obviously. I have the same concern in that we're spending a lot of money. I want to make sure we get it to more teachers in the classroom. And this doesn't necessarily guarantee that. And just like we haven't raised a formula in a couple of years since 1960 or 87, I guess, teachers in Anchorage haven't had, some of them haven't had a pay raise for a number of years. And what I see happening is potentially, and rightfully so, some of the teachers, if this goes into effect, will be able to get the pay raise that has been put off for a number of years for some of them. But what will happen is, if they get a 3% pay raise or a 4% pay raise, 85% of the cost, at least in Anchorage, is salaries and benefits of people that most of this will be used up in, or percentage could be used up in increasing the teacher salaries, which is potentially justified. But, and then if any additional amount goes to administration, you know, out of the 80 million or the 54 million, we might only see $3-4 million, $5 million actually going to what I consider the true problem, which is getting more teachers in the classroom. We have elementary schools with over 30 and sometimes 35 kids in the classroom, and that's the frustration I see on this right here, is that there isn't necessarily a direct translation between increasing money on the state level and increasing the services to the kids. And that's, I think, what everybody wants to get at, is that at least in our areas, I'm not sure, I guess in the rural areas they have different concerns. Maybe classroom size isn't as big a concern, but in Anchorage, classroom size is what I continually heard about, and I would like to try and find some way, if it's a percentage at least on the administration, to keep that down or something, to try and make sure that this money goes where I think people assume it's going to go and where I want it to go, which is to the classroom.
Damn. Representative Hanley to the chair. I think what you're discussing has to do with local control. Now, one of the things that I feel the legislature over the years has taken a pretty strong stand on is to provide local control. We have 54 school districts in Alaska right now, and each of those school districts basically are responsible for how their dollars are spent, whether they be dollars they get from the state or the federal government or local taxation. And from that point on, we get into a whole new issue. It could be local effort, 4 mills to 6 mills, and no more than 23%. Is that adequate or not adequate? But I guess an answer to your question, in which I would interpret that you would want is some type of legislative oversight on the local districts to see that the money, or at least the percentage of the money, was spent in a certain way. And as I mentioned, we used to have a piece of legislation that predated me But I also remember the testimony in which that piece of legislation was done away with the argument that it wasn't enforced. It's kind of an impossible thing to enforce, so if you can't live up to it, why have it? Might be time to look into it again.
Yeah, I have one more comment. I'm just curious, you've been on the Finance Committee for a number of years. We will have, if we fund debt reimbursement and priority one schools, and this increase will be up around $800 million plus for education funding this year. They were predicting a 2% annual increase in foundation costs just due to enrollment increases, which will put us at over $1 billion in very short order. How do you see, I'm concerned about the long-term funding or the ability to carry out education funding in the long term, particularly when in about 5 or 6 years the revenue forecast is for about, instead of $2.5 billion, $1.5 billion. So going, education costs going up and becoming an increasingly large percentage of the budget.
Through the chair again to Representative Hanley, I think he's hitting at some of the important points. So what can we do to adequately fund education to sustain that funding over a period of time? And so oftentimes we look at just the present form of revenues to the state, which is basically based upon oil. I would suspect, of course, that there is going to be a certain shift in revenue sources in the future. I don't know exactly what those shifts would be. It may be more effort on the local area. It may be some type of additional state revenues. But I guess to try to directly answer your question, because you are right, if we increase operation, what this is called for, fully fund debt service, pupil transportation, and priority one schools, we must be talking about 38% to 40% of the total budget. And maybe we can do it this year, but what about the future years? So I think that's part of the deliberation that we have to consider here. I don't have any easy answer, but I do think that we at least have to adequately fund education with that commitment. And this bill, I think, gives us an opportunity to consider what is adequate.
That completes your question. Representative Gonzalez.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Representative Larson, being from the rural area, as a matter of fact, all our schools are in the rural areas, I too am concerned with the services in the classroom. And I would hope that being a sponsor of this bill, that you would look into Representative Miller's suggestion that we guarantee a certain amount of these monies go to the service. I understand that the teachers are going to need a raise, and I understand that we have to have a cost of living increase, but you said that this has been tried before, and the 55% at one time was supposed to be spent in education. I don't know those figures, what they were, but to me it seems like it wasn't enough yet. You know, I would suggest that we do look at it really closely. I would suggest that perhaps if we could come back with a suggestion that Representative Miller's made, that it would be easier for a person like myself to go wholeheartedly with the bill.
Of course, everyone, Mr. Chairman, is talking about a favorite subject of mine, and that's the number of school districts that we have in Alaska. We have school districts that vary from over 40,000 students down to, I think if I remember the figures right, last year, 27 or 28 students. I think we have to look at the organization of how we provide education in Alaska. That's a little bit beyond this bill right here at this time.
Further questions from Representative Larson?
Thank you,
Representative Larson. Representative Boyer has Representative Boyer, did you have an observer? All right, thank you. Mr. McPheeter, would you please join us at the table? State your name, please. Who you represent? For the record.
Ladies and gentlemen, gentlemen. I'm Steve McPeters. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Association of School Administrators and the Alaska Council of School Administrators. And first, I'd like to express our appreciation for this hearing today, so early in the session, and also our appreciation to Representative Mackey and Larson for being the chief sponsors for our piece of legislation, which we feel is a very important piece, and also to the other representatives who have signed on as co-sponsors of our legislation. This bill is a result of a very important meeting, a very historical meeting that educators had in Anchorage in November, where we brought together a representative of all the school districts, locked them in a room for two solid days facing each other, with the urban, rural, REAs having to look each other straight in the eye and make a tremendous number of compromises and after they've established their own grounds and concerns that were put on the table. The results, as you see here, is a bill, House Bill 53, that has four basic components, which we feel are very important to the outcome of children's learning. We as administrators feel that it is our responsibility to look after the welfare of all children in a school and to make recommendations as we see them necessary for the improvement of instruction and learning for children. And this bill is our recommendation for the funding portion of what is necessary to allow us to do the job that you've given us the responsibility to carry out. The bill has basically four components in it, and I believe I've met with each one of you individually and have discussed each one of them. But if there is any other questions, I'll just very briefly go through the four of them, and then you can ask it from there. The first is the Hold Harmless clause. The Hold Harmless is probably the most mystical of them all, as I have gone around the halls and with individual legislators. And that's why I have the water. It's not because I'm going to make a long speech, but I wanted to use it as a point if necessary. The Hold Harmless clause is a recommendation brought to the table by mainly urban administrators, saying that within the formula itself, they have the responsibility of contributing on a local basis up to a maximum of 23% of the total basic need. Now, both cups equal the basic need. 23% is the max the local can contribute, and the rest is picked up by the state. If indeed the property assessment increases in 1990, then by 1993, there could be a decrease in state funding for those districts who have experienced a dramatic increase in your local assessment, 1993. So what happens is the state dollars go down, right? Okay. Now, you have a little different of ratio now of 23%. Now is no longer 23%. It could be 25 to 30% on the local basis. But that's out of equity or out of parity, or in other words, it's in violation of the formula. So the local has to bring some of their contribution to the school. So in the end, what you have totally together is less money to the district. And that's the point of what we're trying to make and to bring onto the table, of the need for some type of a Hold Harmless for districts to prevent that from happening, have some stability and continuity in their program. The second portion is the small schools portion. That was brought to us again by a multiple site districts who have high cost schools, small schools, in areas that have a very low per pupil income. As an example, one school district has a small school that costs them $10,700 per student to operate, and yet the max that they earn from all income is $5,700. So in order to give a good balanced program to that small school, funds are being diverted from the other facilities to that one to establish a good concrete program for them, and well deserved. They are deserving of it as well as everybody else. So the small schools formula allows for those schools to be counted. And in reaction to Representative Lincoln's question, that does help the small schools, the rural schools and villages as well, to a certain level of enrollment. The third issue is a single dual site issue, which many of us have been familiar with since the formula was first conceived back in 1987. I remember very specifically since I was here at that time, that there was a general acknowledgement that when the funding formula was created and put into bill form and moved to the legislature, admittedly, this one section, this one group of schools was going to be hurt in the long term. And the legislature has continued to recognize that problem by, on a year-to-year basis, appropriating funds to help those schools just to make it to the next year. We recommend very strongly that we bring this issue to closure by a complete package of passing this bill and changing the formula. And the fourth issue is the increase in the foundation's formula instructional unit value from 60 to 63,000. This, of course, section benefits every child, every school district in the state of Alaska. Now, we are also familiar that we all know what the governor would like to do. At the same time, it does not lessen our needs and our concerns and the needs of the children that are out there. We feel it's a very strong responsibility, as I do, as I recognize the legislature does too, that we must continue to move forward, not backward, in our educational program to help these children, not only the ones that are in need, but those who are just deserving of a good education. We do feel responsible for that. There are mechanisms that are set up in the legislature now to help those controls in reaction to Representative Miller's question. We have House Bill 173, or the report card bill. We will be accountable, and we do accept the responsibility for responsibly spending the funds that are given to us by the legislature and by the local community. On the same hand, we feel very strongly that the elected officials on the local level, who are school board members, serve very responsibly and deliberately and with concern to see that those dollars are wisely spent and are spread out through the entire school district for the benefit of the kids that are being taught in the classroom. So when we talk about the concern for legislating percentages, it is a little bit of concern to us, although we'd be happy to discuss it further in the committee and subcommittee that Representative Davis would be chairing, but we'll be discussing this issue more. So finally, again, we feel that this is a very, very important piece of legislation. It was born out of a unity of small schools, of urban schools, of village schools, of superintendents and school representatives. We feel we've come to you in all honesty, with sincerity, and we ask you to consider this bill with all the same sincerity and then pass it in a very timely fashion. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lincoln. Yes,
thank you. As my earlier question, I'm all for spending dollars for education for our children, that they, of all children of Alaska, that when they come out of high school, that they're prepared for options, that if they choose to go on to higher education or vocational, or as I've always said in our villages, to be the best trapperman, fisherman, whatever it is, that once they leave that door with their cap on, that we have prepared them for that. And I've always been concerned when we hear about the student-teacher ratio in the urban areas, and then you look at our rural areas, and you say, well, my goodness sakes, you know, there's two teachers for 23 students, and we have one teacher for 30 students in the urban areas. But forgetting that those two teachers are teaching preschool, those that are mentally or physically handicapped, all the way through to high school, in all grade levels, that oftentimes we don't recognize that in the rural areas, that there are uniquenesses that are occurring out there. And so I'm for putting the maximum amount of dollars into educating our kids so that they can have those options regardless of where they live in the state of Alaska. I think that's the top responsibility that we have as lawmakers, our children, the future leaders of the state of Alaska. With that, I appreciate all the work that has been done, and I just have to feel comfortable in moving along with all the educational bills that we are looking at all of the students, whether you live in the very smallest of village or whether you live in Anchorage, that we're looking at the whole spectrum. And you stated in November there was a meeting from representatives from all the districts. I'm assuming then that there were Native people that did come for this meeting, and that the outcome of that meeting are these four areas that you spoke of, and there is a holding of hands for this particular bill from all walks of
life. Chairman, if I may respond.
Yes,
we kind of joke amongst ourselves, if it's almost signing in blood, that this agreement is a total package with everybody on board, in small, large, and REAs as well. That is correct. And it's also, I'd like to point out, it's as you can see by the support papers, it's a, the School Board Association is supporting it, the NEA is supporting it. As you know, all three of our organizations have been before this legislature in the last 5 years requesting some adjustment be made in the area cost differential and other pieces of legislation that are virtually within this packet. These issues are not new. What we chose to do is bring them together in a united force, a united voice, and bring them to you for your consideration. And that's the spirit of which we come to you. And I certainly respect what you're saying, and you're absolutely correct, that we are trying to, in our plan, the overall global view of this, is that it is to benefit all children in the state of Washington.
Thank you. Any further questions? Yes, Representative Miller.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I am really impressed that something like this could be worked out. And I do believe that people are genuinely trying through this bill to address those needs of children. And I do believe I will support it. But I have a great concern that in spending more money, that I actually see the effects of that when I tour the schools. Hopefully, I'll get out to see some schools beyond my district. But when I see those schools and when I hear testimony from teachers that they have to supply their own colored construction paper and some of these things, and this bill will say that, yes, Mary Miller approves spending more money, I want to see the effects of that across this state. And I'm wondering, since you are here, if I could ask another question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Do you have any statistics to tell us how much of a percent of the educational dollar is being spent on administration? Has it remained the same since 1986, 87? Is it increasing? Has it decreased? Are there areas of the state where it is much higher than other areas of the state?
Unequivocally, I would say it has decreased since 1986. As an example, one school district had three administrators without any teaching responsibility, and today both the superintendent and the principal are also teaching courses. In fact, if the report came from a superintendent who was there 20 years ago, trying to make, Mr. Chairman, is that since 1987, when we took a 10% reduction in funding across the state of Alaska, there were tremendous reductions, not just in teaching staff, causing the increase in enrollment classes, but there was tremendous decreases all across the board. Reading specialists, curriculum specialists, principals, assistants were all laid aside in order to maximize the effectiveness of the schools. If this bill does not go through, and if the existing formula stays the way it stays the same as it is now at $60,000, Fairbanks alone is going to have to reduce their budget $5 million. Juneau School District is going to have to reduce theirs $600,000. Kodiak, it's $750,000. These are hard facts, hard figures. So we're not saying that we need more money to do different things or to do more things. We're trying to maintain what we have. We haven't had an increase since 1987, and yet we are falling behind, further and further behind, because there are automatic cost increases in teacher salaries, in supplies and materials, and that those funds have to come from somewhere. And there's in which we are facing this dilemma. It's not just a one-year problem. It's something that has just been kind of snowballing since 1987, and here we are again, but it just continues to get worse. If you wanted to compare it with the buying power, in 1987, we had about a $5,200 per student income from the state school districts. In buying power today, it's a little over $4,000. So you see that there is a tremendous difference in where we're then to where we are now. And we, in closure, Representative Miller, we will be accountable. We are not afraid of being accountable or responsible for these funds and expenditures of them. So I don't know if that gives you any comfort at all, but that's our job.
Representative Lincoln.
To follow up, if I might. So maybe you could say it again, maybe a little bit differently. Representative Miller was asking the administratively too, but am I hearing you say then that because we're, and I wish I could use your water cup somehow as an example, that since we haven't moved ahead and we're actually back a ways or down, that in there are real, real situations out there in my district, and I certainly know in Representative Gonzalez's district as well, where they are Xeroxing off textbooks. I mean, we're not even talking about colored paper. We're talking about textbooks and real situations where the teacher in my village is teaching preschool handicapped children up through eighth grade, and I just shake my head. So are we then saying with this that we're just bringing it up to an acceptable maintenance level, or are we going to be able to move the educational level on where we should belong in the state of Alaska in comparison to the rest of the nation?
I would hope we'd be able to move our educational system on beyond. However, quite honestly with you, there are some districts that have fallen so far behind that they have continued to cut and cut and cut. With these funds, they will be restored back to the level where we were in 1986, when we did have those services available, which we do not have now.
Well, I can see you're going to have fun in the Finance Committee.
I'm sure we will.
Does that complete your question?
Yes,
Representative
you.
Betty Davis.
Sherry
Davis.
Wrong Davis. That's all right. We'll work this out. thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, a little bit in response to what Representative Lincoln's concerns, I don't think this is a panacea for every problem we've got in all the school districts, but I see this as bringing us a lot, long ways ahead of where we are right now and where we've been for the past several years. If we could, by some miracle, get this all the way through the legislature, there'd be a lot of dancing in the streets in school districts, I think, large and small all over the state, because it would be a substantial way beyond where they are right now, and it would go a long ways to address some of the inequity questions that have been raised over the last few years.
Then, Mr. Chairman, and then we go back to Representative Hanley's question about future, that if we're just sort of bringing it up to where maintenance quo, then looking for the future, where do we need to be and where can we afford to be in and planning toward that?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Lincoln, I've been a supporter of measures that were not particularly popular even with a lot of the people in my constituency, such as the endowment plan, which would have provided a solid base of funding for education for the future so that we got out of this situation where every year we're fighting over how big of a chunk does education take and then what do we do with the rest of our budget, which you and I both heard quite a bit lately. And I still want to look for one of those mechanisms. And frankly, if we really did have $1 billion or whatever has been bandied about in excess, quote-unquote, excess revenues this year, my first priority for that would be to establish some kind of a forward funding mechanism for education or in some other manner provide for a little bit easier situation for future funding. I think that until we do come up with some kind of a way of funding education for the long term, we're going to constantly be dealing with this every single year. And I know I'm sick of it, and I know everybody in this room is probably sick of it.
Senator Betty Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make a comment and not ask the question. I'm very supportive of this bill, and I'm glad that all parties involved was able to come together to have a united front, because many times they have not. And there is something in this bill for everyone. I know the overall concern is the amount of money that it takes to bring this bill into fruition, but if it can be done, we will be doing a service that's needed. And it's not to say that all the money that we put in education means that the more you put in, the better the education system is going to be. But I'm here to tell you that since 86, school districts have been suffering. When the state had to cut back on the monies and then we began to cut our budgets, they continue to do that. And just when you think you're getting ahead, then you're not getting ahead. You have increased enrollments and other things. And you talk about administrative, if the cost is going down, there are some figures that you need to pick up from Anchorage School District, because that's your district. And it talks about how administrative costs have gone down, and there's an audit that you can look at. Just look at some of those things. I don't know what else they have around the state that you can look at, but you can tell very well that we have cut down considerably in the area administration, and I think you would be pleased. I'm not in favor of saying a certain percentage to go towards administration, the rest to go somewhere else, because it would be hard for us to sit here as legislators and say where that money actually needs to go, but each local school district should be able to do that. And in my city, they are concerned about class size, and they are having mandates from parents and community people, businesses and all coming forward saying that's what they want to see. And they have committed to that. So if we give this $63,000 per instruction unit, they would be able to lower some class sizes in some ways and bring on board some of the other things that they need. But if we say where the percentage would be, I think we would be doing a disservice to all school districts, and I would not be supportive of any such amendment. I know that we need to look at it. Accountability is where it is. I want to see it more than a report card. There's all kinds of things that can be looked at, and I'd be willing to consider all those kinds of things. Forward funding, if we could, at least 1 year forward funded education would be great. And even though I know we want to lower our operational budget, I don't believe that we need to lower it on the back of education at this time. And even though that is a lot of money, I would be supportive of this if we could come up with the dollars to do it.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Further questions from the committee? You can drink the rest of your water, Mr. McKinney.
I'll thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
A number of people who have asked to testify on this bill. We're really using up a lot of time. We had three bills on our agenda today, and I'd ask if you try to keep your testimony as brief as possible. I suspect that you're all in favor. We'll start with John Holst.
Representative Kearney and committee members. I'm here as the superintendent of one of those phantom districts that you've been alluding to that have been impacted dramatically by the funding. We are the winner or loser of the latest race, the statistic from the Department of Education, indicating the cost per pupil. And at Craig City Schools, it is this year at $52.67, which is lower than Anchorage, Matsu, Keenan, Meshkin. We have been squeezed considerably through the entire time that this foundation formula has been in place. But I'm not here representing Craig today. I'm here representing this bill and supporting it fully, because Craig is not the only school district in the state that is suffering. I believe that all school districts are suffering, and they're suffering in different ways. This bill, the bill you have in front of you, manages to bring relief to all districts in the state, and that's the reason it's being supported. And then I'm here as just as strongly in support of the single-site, dual-site issue, which we're a member of, a group of. But I'm just as strongly in support of Matsu's problem of having small schools where they have to siphon off funds from their district budget in order to maintain a program. I'm certainly cognizant of that problem because that's the total number of dollars we have, in our case, to operate from. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the committee?
And I would invite Representative Miller to visit Craig at any time. I'd be happy to help you with your accounts.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you.
The next person who's asked to testify is Ralph Toronu. Please state your name and be we represent the record. Thank you.
Chairman Arnie, my name is Ralph Tronrich from Skagway City School District. I've been on the board there for 9 years, and we're one of the districts that's within the single dual consortium or group, whatever you want to call it. We've been severely impacted by these cuts for a number of years. And this isn't the first time that I've testified or anything along those lines. It's been an ongoing problem with us. We were impacted adversely because the railroad, which is our main basis of economy, shut down a number of years ago. And back when everybody else was hiring people, we were laying people off, laying staff off, had a very, very big decrease in enrollment. And we've been struggling with this thing now for going on at least 7 years. It's getting to the point with us where it's beginning to have an impact on our test scores, even in our secondary part of our curriculum. And we need to have something done with it. We can't provide a broad enough curriculum in our secondary schools to keep the kids interested and keep them going with the program. So we're very much in support of that aspect of it, and I'm having been involved with education for 9 years, I'm very aware of the problems that are addressed by the other portions of this bill also, so I just wanted to speak in favor of the bill as a whole, as a representative, not only the kids of Skagway, but the kids of Alaska.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much for your support. Next person to testify is John Wittenbein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm the superintendent from Kodiak.
Please state your name, John.
John Wittenbein.
For the records, thank you.
I want to spend a lot of time. Obviously, I'm here in support of this bill also. But as I've been listening to the discussion that's taken place, I'd like to take you back a few years. In 1984, the school district budget in Kodiak was $16.8 million. Today, maybe you can write that down and I'll take you through some math. Today it's 16.1. We have 250 more children. And we have 15 more teachers. Where did those teachers come from? In answer to your question, we wiped out the middle of our administration. We don't have that opportunity to do that again. If this bill doesn't pass, we will have to reduce again $750,000. This bill will maintain status quo in Kodiak. Just status quo. So when you say, is this going to affect class size? Hopefully it will keep class size where we have it now. It is a compromise. It was put together by, as you heard, a whole number of districts, and we're excited about seeing your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Question? Yes, Representative
Gonzalez. Yeah. Mr. Whitaby, I like your enthusiasm. I do have one question, and you know, we haven't asked this question, and obviously it doesn't belong to us, so to speak, because finance will take care of that. But the public out there is throughout the state of Alaska, I'm sure they're all for education, but they're not for spending money. And the problem we have to face is the fact that when we go out and tell the people, yes, John Gonzalez signed on to this thing and he spent so many more $1 million, they're going to scream and say, well, show it to us. Show us where that money went. And that's why when we talk about the service in the classroom, a person is able to tell these people out there that are saying, don't cut us, but cut somebody else.
I'm very familiar with that. We go through that process with the school district.
But we're able to tell them, well, listen, this is where the money, this, we appropriated this money so it can go, and you know what they want? The children is the most important factor out there. Anyway, I wanted to know, my question to you was, how do you feel about that, Mr. Whitaby?
Well, the money will go to the children. I mean, whether it's in administration or not, I don't think you had to have a misconception that just because it's going into administration that's not going to benefit children. But what I want you to recognize is that we have an opportunity in this one bill to bring all of those divergent groups together for the first time in as long as I can remember. And I think that's significant. I think that's the most significant part of this bill. To be honest with you, there are parts of this bill that I've had a hard time with for a long time. But I support the whole bill in the art of compromise.
Next.
Further questions from the committee? Thank you.
Thank you.
The last person on my list to testify is Willie Anderson. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Willie Anderson. I'm representing NEA Alaska, the teacher organization and employees across the state of Alaska. We come before you and we have submitted a paper of support for this bill. To come before you supporting the bill, there are two primary issues that we would like to highlight in this bill. First issue is the issue of single and dual flight. That issue has been talked about a lot today and it's a real issue for us because the single and dual flights have been harmed by the foundation formula since its inception. And each year the legislative has attempted to fix it by a supplemental bill. This bill attempts to fix it in a unilateral way that fixes it once and for all so that we don't have to go through that supplemental legislation once each year again. The second issue is the foundation unit, instructional unit number. At $63,000, that's not enough, but that's the compromise that's there and that we're supporting that compromise. We think it needs to be much more, and in our paper we illustrate to you how that erosion of that money over the years have happened. We are supportive of this bill. We hope that you pass this bill. This situation has existed now for 5 years since 1986 and 87-88 instructional year when it truly took effect. But we've been in this situation now far too long. It's time to fix it and it's time to move forward. It's not going to be the end because we're going to be coming back to you in a year or 2 years from now saying that the instruction unit number still isn't high enough, and we've already stated that, and we've got to be forthright with that assumption. We need to fund education. Education is a priority for the state. It should be a priority for the legislature, and we urge your support for the bill.
Thank you for testimony. Any questions from the committee? Thank you. We have two other bills to deal with today. I do have a standing committee for educational funding chaired by Representative Davis. And members on that are Representative Gonzalez, Representative Betty Davis, and Representative Mary Miller, and Representative Lincoln also serves on that committee. I'm going to refer this bill to that committee to a time certain next Thursday. The chairman has assured me that she can work on this bill and have it back to us by Thursday. I, too, am concerned about the value of the instructional unit, and I'd like to see the committee look at possibly increasing that. I know that's a Finance Committee matter, but I think if this committee feels that instructional unit value should be increased in this legislation. Like, we should do it here and let the finance committee decide if they don't agree. And so that terminates this portion of the hearing on that bill, and we will take up House Bill 15 after about a 1 minute recess. So those people who want to leave the room can leave the room. Back to order, please. We're going to take up House Bill 14, Representative Boyer's bill, and we'd like to ask Representative Boyer to step forward and make his presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For the record, my name is Mark Boyer. I'm a representative from District 20, CB in Fairbanks. I want to thank you and thank the members of the committee for hearing HB 14 today. It's a very, very straightforward bill, and in fact, after listening to the whole conversation, not only in this committee, but I've heard the same presentation in the House or Senate House Committee this morning. I feel like we're going from global down to very, very narrow, more localized set of issues, and what we're proposing in HB 14 is to take a kind of a surgical approach to providing for hope for some young people in the educational system to kind of break the bonds of dependency by providing them an outside mechanism for getting to college. And the basic thrust of HB 14 is to provide tuition grants to Alaska high school graduates who meet a certain set of criteria. One is that they have their residence for 2 years in the state, that they've graduated at least 2 years preceding the admissions, that they've graduated, as the bill is written today, with a grade point average of 2.5 over their 3 years of high school, and that they have a parent or guardian that resides in the state, that they graduated with 21 credits out of high school, and that they have an ACT composite score of at least 18, and that they have no criminal record, and that they've applied for federal tuition grants, and that they also meet some criteria for financial need. There are a number of federal and state grants, but most of them are targeted narrowly to the financially needy, and I think that that's been the emphasis at the federal level and the state level for a period of time. But what this does is kind of broaden that focus a little bit and say that while there remain a lot of needy Alaskans, a lot of needy Americans who are striving to get to college, what we haven't focused on or haven't combined is the opportunity for striving for excellence. That what we're trying to do in this bill is suggest that, and I would at some point make a recommendation that we change the GPA requirements to 3.0, which is, as we all know, B average, that by providing an opportunity for striving for excellence and providing that your tuition would be paid for, there are some students with the proper motivation early enough in the whole educational process that would strive for that excellence. Some young people feel, frankly, that there is no hope, that there's no way out. There are always going to be opportunities, educational opportunities for the truly gifted, the very bright. There are always going to be opportunities, frankly, for the very poor, who happen to be bright or not bright or all kinds of things. And there are opportunities for young people who are handicapped. And we're moving along, but you know, this is, as I said, a very narrow kind of surgical approach to trying to provide opportunities for kids who, you know, just normal kids who come perhaps from dysfunctional families, who, as we've laid out here, come from families that perhaps aren't financially as well off as others, who only need a little stimulation early on to click that light on, give them the opportunity to say, hey, I can get there all by myself if I apply myself. I'm out there hustling, working hard, learning, achieving academic, not excellence, but certainly not mediocrity either, and that somehow that would give them the opportunity to get ahead and get a job in a world marketplace and an Alaskan marketplace, which is continually more and more rigorous in the sense of competition. We all talk about, you know, kind of youth at risk, breaking the cycle of dependencies, replacing the American or the possible dream or impossible dream, and kind of realizing America's hope for our children, and we hear, you know, all those kinds of things. We all embrace all those things. There's a lot of movement that embrace all of those kinds of things, but somehow there remain, you know, additional opportunities for young kids, and this is just one of those opportunities to bring another group of young people into the opportunity mainstream for realizing the American dream. And statistically at-risk students, that did not receive some kind of intervention early in school are the most likely to end up, you know, pregnant or dropping out for any number of other reasons. And again, this is just a bill that's targeted to that group of kids. It's a bill aimed at giving them some hope. And Mr. Chairman, without taking lots more time, I'd be happy to answer questions. I think it's very needy, very timely. It has the support of the Post-Secondary Education Commission. In fact, is one of their highest priorities in the sense of the early intervention approach to things. We did not work together. I had not approached the university. In fact, this came about as having watched a television on a Sunday night in November, right after the election, where I saw a 60-minute presentation about this kind of approach to education, where a man in Louisiana, a millionaire, had come in and told inner-city kids, blacks in the, you know, in Baton Rouge, I think, that he would guarantee their tuition if they would, you know, strive for excellence, get that B average. And in fact, the state of Louisiana followed that up after he had initiated that, and does have an operating program on the books. So that's where the idea came from. It's not new. A number of other states have approached this. We don't, in the state of Alaska, have an approach that's quite like this. So would be happy to answer questions.
Representative Lincoln.
Representative Boyer, I just, I really applaud you for putting this bill forth, because it, what you said, there were a couple of little words that you said that are so true, that when a student, that it gives hope, that sometimes they see no way out, but there's a little ray of hope. And when I saw the 2.5, I said, my God, that's low. But I hope you don't raise that, because when we talk about hope, that I was one of those students that probably in high school would meet this. Because of the hope, because of not thinking that I had to be an A, knowing I could never be an A. I mean, that was just, I really strive for it, but I just hit the Fairbanks school system just a little bit too late, and it was out of my reach. And I think what it, if somebody had said I could go on to college in this tuition, that 2.5, it would have given me a little boost. So I hope you keep it at 2.5, and I truly support this bill.
Further questions from the committee? Thank you, Representative Boyer.
Thank you.
We have no one signed up to testify on this bill. What is the wish of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, since we have no one signed up, maybe I can ask the question of Representative Boyer before he leaves. You talked about the 2.5 and maybe upping it, and I support Representative Lincoln's concern that it not be upped. In fact, I figure if a student can make a C average and have potentialities to move on to college, we ought to want to consider that person, because that is what you call your average student, normal student. And having some difficulties coming from dysfunctional families, even though you might think 2.5 is low, it's not low when you're struggling just to exist. And so I also wanted to question, has no criminal records. You're talking about students coming in and having their records purged when they're grown. Are you going to consider those things that take place with teenagers where they might have a record, they would not qualify for this, because many of the students that you want to reach might not make that qualification based upon that?
Right. Mr. Chairman.
If it was a felony, I could understand, because it probably would have been switched over to an adult jurisdiction, but those children that don't fall into that, have you taken that into consideration?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I've actually thought about that quite a bit, and let me just say that programs that are like this one proposes try to also suggest to young people that if they keep their nose clean, if they keep themselves out of trouble, that there's an incentive, there's a reward for doing that, and it's a little broader approach, and yet you clearly exclude some kids who did get in trouble, may get in trouble from the process, and I don't feel strongly about it, other than I think that it's important to offer as much encouragement for kids to, you know, live the straight and narrow, to resist the temptations that all of us are confronted with daily with regard to alcohol and drugs and all the whole array of things that are confronting young kids in schools. And it's just another one of those things that gives kids a little bit of hope, that if you keep it clean, you do well in school, you know, all the things that probably our parents taught us when we were growing up. Those are good values. They're wholesome values. And yet kids, not all kids are going to hit that same value level and do it. But I'd like to, from my own personal perspective, kind of like to leave that in. I think it's a good part, point for discussion. It will continue to be debated because, frankly, I've received mail on one subject as it relates to this, and that's the issue, is the criminal record, because you don't want to also discourage kids who had a problem but now are doing all right from accessing the system either. And what I think in practicality would happen is most kids who say they had a problem at 15, I know that when you become the age of an adult, that most of the time those records, unless there were felony convictions, are in fact kind of expunged, and so those would not show up in this particular case. So I think there probably are some opportunities, but clearly there might be some kids, unless we change this, that would drop through the cracks.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say that if we put this into subcommittee, that's one of the areas that we discuss.
Is it your request that I put it in the subcommittee first?
I don't know if you want to pass it on. No, I said if you did.
It was my intention to pass it on.
If you pass it on, I still have some concern about that. If you're saying that clearly you already have searched the record, as it says that if those things happened prior to 18, they would not show up in the records anyway and would not be considered, I have no problem.
Mr. Chairman, because of the representative's concerns, we will take that under very close advisement and do some additional work. And there are a lot of bills before the legislature, and I would hope that we not hold this one up. I can do that work. We're very closely located, so I can work with them.
Thank you, Representative Boyer.
Thank you.
We appreciate that. I understand a motion to move the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass the bill with individual recommendations.
Is there an objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered. The next bill on our agenda is House Bill 15. Representative Larson. Is Representative Larson here? Yeah, Representative Larson, will you take the chair, please, and lead us through your bill.
Subcommittee reviewed the committee substitute and recommended that it be moved to full committee given a hearing date and moved on out.
Very good. I'd be here to encourage that, Mr. Chairman. And to answer any questions.
Any questions for Representative Larson?
The changes in the figures were just because they were updated, is that correct?
That's correct.
The updated numbers. Is there a reason why we didn't, I mean, I don't know what's coming out in the governor's supplemental. Is this typical of having special supplemental bills versus all of them combined in one?
Through the chair, Representative Hanley, when then Governor Cooper was proposing a supplemental bill in regards to the vetoes, these were two of the things that he was not proposing. That's the reason for the separate bill.
Well, we don't know whether that's the current governor's bill.
Continue, Representative.
Sure. On the supplemental, this, I supported the full funding as it went out of this committee, the full debt reimbursement, et cetera. My understanding is this amount is based on a full year.
That's correct.
And that we are already two-thirds of the way through the school year?
That's correct.
Is this going to, now did schools budget based on a supplemental is supposed to pay for it? Is this a cost or program, is my understanding, rather than try to, you know, I'm all for full funding and debt reimbursement for next year. My concern is, my question is, this is basically just giving them additional money. Because they've already budgeted probably at a lower level. And
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanley, take for example debt service. You have to pay X number of dollars. Certain percentage of that is to come from the state. If the state does not pay that percentage, then the local district has to make up the difference. So this would be restoring it to the statutory levels where the state would pay its statutory amount and the local district would pay its amount. You understand what I mean? It's nothing that you can underfund. If you owe the bank some money, you got to pay them the full amount that you owe them.
Does that complete your question?
I understand that, Mike, but if we don't fund it, they will not hire additional. I mean, they budget based on their full amount of revenues coming into the district. So.
Yeah. Basically, Representative Hanley, this would be money to the municipalities, not directly to the school districts, to pay for the debt service.
Thank you. Further questions for Representative Larson? What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion to pass HB 15 out with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, Representative Lincoln has moved that the bill be moved with individual recommendations, and no objection, the bill will be moved. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
This completes the work of this committee this morning. The committee is adjourned.